By the time the sun was lowering toward the peaks in the west, the crows were gone, leaving death and destruction in their wake. There had been nearly 100 warriors in the village. Many of them were dead, and others were badly wounded now. Badger had survived, but all of the pride and arrogance was gone from his face. He was the chief of a defeated people. A dozen or more captives, mostly children and young women, had been taken prisoner by the Crows. Preacher searched the entire village, but he didn't find Sinclair and Faith or their bodies. They were gone. There was no doubt about that. And the only place they could have gone was with the Crows. Carling sat cross-legged on the ground, rocking back and forth.
Oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do?
Hodge paced around ineffectually. Rip tended to the wound in Tom Ballinger's leg. Preacher took stock of the situation and didn't like the conclusion he came up with. Someone had to go after the Crows and try to free Sinclair and Faith. At least Rip was in pretty good shape, as was Preacher himself. But other than the two of them, the only ones available to join a rescue party appeared to be Willard Carling and Jasper Hodge, who were probably more of a danger to themselves than they were to the enemy.
Stop your moaning, Carling, and get on your feet.
What?
I said stand up. And Hodge, goddammit, stop that pacing. We got plans to make.
Plans? What sort of plans? What on earth can we do?
We can go after them damn Crows and get Miss Carling and Sinclair away from them.
But you've lost your mind. There are only four of us.
There was only one of me when I started after Badger's war party, figuring on rescuing you folks. I managed to do that.
Only by getting captured yourself and almost dying in battle with that savage.
You best be careful about calling Badger a savage. And we're going to be counting on him for a little help in the way of supplies and arms and such like.
Why can't he and his men go rescue the prisoners? The Crows are their enemies, not ours.
That ain't the way it works. Badger and his people have folks to lay to rest and a village to rebuild. He lost about half his warriors in that fight. He can't afford to lose any more.
But the Crows lost men, too. Didn't you say that a lot of them were killed?
Yeah, maybe as many as 30 or 40. It's hard to be sure because they carried most of the bodies off with them, rather than leaving them behind to be mutilated. But there's still probably at least 60 warriors in that bunch. Badger could take every man he's got left and still be outnumbered.
And yet you think the four of us would have a chance?
What choice do we have if we want to see Miss Faith and Sinclair again?
And a handful of men can sometimes do what a bunch can't, especially when one of them is Preacher.
I could never live with myself if something terrible happened to Faith and I just stood by and let it take place. I have to try to save her. Thank you for helping me to see that.
You can't be serious! Four men against 60 or more?
Five.
Preacher turned his head and saw Panther leaping coming toward him.
You know what we're talking about, Panther?
Yes. Chester was a good friend.
All right. Five of us in. That is, if you're going along, Hodge.
Oh, you're not going to leave me here alone with these savages. Make no mistake about that.
We'll start first thing in the morning.
Why not tonight? Now that we've made up our minds, why waste time?
Yeah, because it's late. It'll be night before much longer. We need to eat and rest and get a good night's sleep if we can. I got a hunch that the Crows will be heading back to their usual hunting grounds as fast as possible, now that they've hit Badger's people so hard and taken some prisoners. We may have a long chase in front of us.
Oh. Faith didn't know how much longer she could keep going. She was exhausted, and having to help Sinclair along just added to her weariness. Sinclair was the only adult male who had been taken prisoner. The other captives were all women or children, and Sinclair was still too groggy to be able to do anything except stumble along with Faith's help. She hoped that all the blows to the head hadn't permanently impaired his faculties. She knew she was going to need his help to survive this captivity. The two of them were surrounded by the other prisoners, couple dozen in all. Faith estimated that the Crows numbered 50 or 60, so there were plenty of them to surround the captives and prod them along. The warrior who had hit Sinclair with the coup stick seemed to be the leader of the party. He was short but very muscular, and he strode along at the head of the column with an aggressive confidence that spoke of command. An hour or so after leaving the village, the Indians and their prisoners came to a small canyon. Faith was surprised to see a large number of horses gathered inside the canyon. She supposed the Crows had left their ponies there before going to attack the village. Now they mounted up, but the prisoners were not allowed to ride as the grueling trek continued. The Crows forced the captives to walk, poking at them with lances if they lagged or stumbled too much.
Faith, I'm sorry. I wanted so much to protect you, and instead I failed you.
It's all right, Chester. There was nothing you could do. There were just too many of the savages.
I should have done something.
Can you walk by yourself? No offense, Chester, but you're a big man, and it's hard for me to help you along like this.
My head's still pretty woozy, but let me give it a try.
Chester took his arm from around Faith's shoulders and straightened. Although he swayed a little, he managed to stay upright.
I can make it. I'm sorry I had to lean on you.
It's all right.
As time wore on, Sinclair seemed to grow a little steadier on his feet. It occurred to Faith that the prisoners were like a herd of cattle or sheep being driven by the mounted engines around them. Chief, if that's who he was, still rode at the front of the group, and he didn't call a halt to the forced march until the sun was almost down. By that time, Faith was so tired she thought she couldn't go another step. The muscles in her legs felt like lead.
Is there anything I can do to help, Faith?
Not unless you can get me away from these savages. And I don't think you can do that, Chester. Outnumbered 60-1 as you are.
You can never tell what might happen. I'll keep my eyes open for a chance to escape.
Oh, no. You'll just get yourself killed. I don't want that.
Are you saying that we should cooperate with them?
What other choice do we have?
Maybe Preacher will come after us, the way he did before, when we were captured by Bites Like a Badger.
You're assuming that Preacher is even still alive.
Of course he's alive. He's too good a fighter to have been killed in battle.
I don't know much about warfare, but I assume good fighters get killed in battle all the time. There must be good fighters on both sides, you know.
I suppose you're right. Still, I'm not going to give up hope.
The two men lurking in the trees half a mile from the Teton Sioux village had listened to the screams and shots and other sounds of battle and not known exactly what was going on at first. Then, Luther Snell and Baldy had crept closer until they could see the desperate struggle taking place.
I ain't sure, but I think them other Injuns is Crows. Hard to tell for certain without getting closer. I ain't in much of a mood to do that right now.
No, I don't reckon that'd be too healthy. What are Crows doing down here? This ain't their normal stomping grounds.
No, but an Injun will go a long way when he's in the mood for a raiding. And from the rumors I've heard, old Medicine Bull has been raising hell lately. Says he's gonna make this a bloody summer for all the enemies of his people.
Which is just about everybody when you're talking about them dung-eaters. I'll bet you're right, Baldy. I'll bet it's Medicine Bull and his Crows raiding that village. Question is, what are we gonna do about it?
Do about it? I don't know about you, Snell, but I plan on keeping myself well clear of that village until it's all over. I may not have any hair to lose, but I'm still mighty partial to this old ass of mine.
Carlin's in there. Without him, we can't get rich.
No matter how rich you are when your scalp's decorating a Crow war lance. Anyway, there's not a damn thing we can do right now. We got to just wait until the fighting's over and hope that Carlin lives through it all right.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I just wish we'd figured out a way to get our hands on that prissy little bastard before now.
Once they had determined what was going on, Snell and Baldy returned to the temporary camp in the woods where the others waited. They had been shifting their camp every day to avoid discovery by scouts from the village, and the rest of the men were getting tired of it. Snell didn't want to lose them. He knew he needed some sort of lucky break, and goddamn soon, the attack on the village by Medicine Bull's Crows wasn't it.
What's going on over there, Snell?
That village is being raided by a war party from another tribe, Vickery. Baldy thinks it's Medicine Bull and his Crows.
Damn it! That tears it, I reckon. No point in us hanging around here now.
Nothing's changed.
Nothing except there's no chance of us getting our hands on Carlin now.
You don't know that.
You don't know that he's gonna live through that fight.
I don't know that he won't. Look, chances are that Carlin's hiding somewhere until the battle's over. Did he seem to any of you fellas like the sort who take a hand in somebody else's fight?
Didn't seem like much of a fighter at all. Luther's right. When the trouble started, Carlin probably found himself a hole, crawled into it, and pulled it in after him.
Damn right, Dimmock. Which means that after the raid is over, it'll be easier than ever to get a hold of Carlin. He won't have as many Injuns around him. And maybe some of the folks with him, like Preacher and Giddens, will get themselves killed. I don't see them letting a fight go by without taking a hand in it.
So you're telling us we just got to keep on waiting like we've been doing, Snell?
If you want to be rich like the rest of us, that's what you'll do.
You've been dangling that carrot in front of our noses all along, but I don't feel any richer. Fact of the matter is, with us running low on supplies, I'm starting to get hungry, and that makes me feel downright poor.
You can leave any time you want. We've been all over that.
I spent this much time on this harebrained scheme. I reckon I can waste a little more.
We'll see how much of a waste it is when we're counting that fortune and ransom money we get for Carling.
By the next morning, things weren't much better in the village. Wisps of smoke still rose from the ruins of some of the burned-out lodges. Grim-visaged warriors patrolled the area around the village just in case the raiders returned, although no one really believed that that would happen. Bites Like a Badger's scarred face was bleaker than ever as he listened to Preacher explain that he, Rip, Carling, Hodge, and Panther Leaping were going after the crows.
You have great courage, but you are fools.
How do you reckon?
You are five against how many? 50 warriors? 60?
Yeah, we'll be outnumbered. But we can move fast, and we'll hit the crows when and where they're not expecting it. That'll give the prisoners a chance to get away.
You seek to rescue only the fire-haired woman and the big white man. You care nothing for the women and children of my people who were taken away by the dung-eaters.
No, that ain't true. We'll do our best to free all the captives.
I cannot prevent you from doing this, nor would I wish to if I could. What do you need from me?
Well, we have guns, but we could use some extra powder and shot if you got it.
All that we have is yours. What else?
Well, we want our horses back and some spare horses in case some of the prisoners need to ride. Maybe some food so we won't have to stop and do any hunting.
Agreed.
And a couple of good bows along with arrows for Rip and me.
This will be done.
Oh, and one more thing. Do you know who was in charge of that war party? I sort of like to know who my enemies are.
I saw him with my own eyes. It was Medicine Bull, war chief of the Dung Eaters. I hate to call such a one by the honored name of a chief.
Medicine Bull, huh? Our trails have never crossed before, but I've heard of him. He's supposed to be a mighty warrior.
Puh, for a Dung Eater.
If Medicine Bull is as cagey as I've heard, it won't be easy getting those prisoners away from him.
No. But if anyone can do it, Preacher, I believe it is you.
Willard Carling wore a haggard look in this bloody dawn, and Preacher suspected he hadn't slept much the night before. Determination was still etched on Carling's face, though. Jasper Hodge just looked tired and scared. Rip Giddens and Panther Leaping walked up to the lodge about the same time that Preacher did.
Well, it's done. I hope Switchfoot and Hammerhead don't mind being laid to rest on scaffolds, Sioux fashion, instead of being buried like white men.
Both of them spent a lot of time with the Indians. I don't reckon they'd be bothered by what you did.
I didn't have a shovel, so I didn't have much choice. Panther and me built their scaffolds, wrapped them up good, and helped them on their way along the Great Sky Road. Like I said, it's done.
Badger's given us our horses back, along with some extra mounts, powder and shot, and some supplies. Plus those bows and arrows I told you about, Rip.
Good. I'm ready when you are, Preacher.
As soon as we got everything together, we'll get started.
I Are you sure about this, Preacher? I mean, I want to rescue Faith and Chester as much as anybody, but it just seems so futile to go up against such overwhelming odds.
You wouldn't feel that way if it was you in the hands of those savages, Jasper, instead of Chester Sinclair. If you were a captive, you'd be praying that someone would come and help you.
I'm sure that's true, but it doesn't change the facts of the matter. There are only five of us. Now what chance do we have, really?
Well, folks didn't give old George Washington and the Continental Army much chance against the Redcoats, neither. And I know for a fact that most folks who saw the British marching up the Delta toward New Orleans figured Andy Jackson and the rest of us boys were done for. But by God, we weren't. We whipped those Englishers and sent them running all the way back down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
I still say it's different, but I'm not trying to back out. I said I'd go along with you, and I will. I just think it's a fool's errand, and we'll all wind up dead.
Huh. Badger just said pretty much the same thing to me. Congratulations, Hodge. You're thinking like a savage now.
Within half an hour, the rescue party was ready to leave. Preacher and Rip had the bows and quivers full of arrows slung on their backs. Their rifles were held across the saddles in front of them. Preacher had salvaged the rifles that had belonged to Switchfoot and Hammerhead and given them to Carling and Hodge. Each man also carried a brace of pistols, a knife, and a tomahawk. Tom Ballinger limped out of the lodge to bid them farewell and good luck on their mission. He had a crude crutch propped under his right arm, and a young engine woman stood to his left and helped steady him.
I wish I was going with you, boys. I don't much cotton to staying here.
I wish you were coming along too, Tom. We could use another good man.
Well, I'll be here when you get back with the prisoners. Good luck.
Man, the same. Stay off that bad leg as much as you can.
Preacher leaned down from the saddle to shake hands with Tom, as did Rip. Then, with Preacher leading the way, a group of five would-be rescuers rode out of the village. Ballinger lifted a hand and waved awkwardly at him, even though they didn't look back. The thought was strong in his mind that he might not ever see him again. Over the past few days, Wingate had gotten to know Lieutenant Royce Corrigan fairly well. Just as Wingate had suspected, this assignment was the very first one Corrigan had received since being commissioned as an officer. Corrigan didn't really try to find out anything about the man who was serving as their guide, and that was just fine with Wingate. Like most mountain men, he was just naturally closed-mouthed around strangers. The important thing was, they were closing in on the folks they were after. Wingate wasn't sure why Corrigan was looking for the members of Willard Carling's expedition. That was the one thing about which the lieutenant had been rather circumspect. But Wingate hoped to catch up to him soon. They had followed the trail toward Baldpate, and there had been some bad moments when they came upon the scene of what evidently had been a battle between the Carling expedition and some Indians. Further on, they had found some remains that Wingate thought belonged to one of the Ballinger brothers. It was impossible to say which one, and Wingate wasn't completely sure that the body was that of either Tom or Ed, because varmints had been at it. But still, it was obvious that something bad had happened. There were no other bodies, though, which meant the other members of the expedition had pushed on, either on their own or as prisoners of the Indians. So the soldiers pushed on as well, with Wingate and Lieutenant Corrigan leading. The trapper's keen eyes were able to pick up the trail left by those they were following. He recalled that Rip Giddens had said something about taking Carling to the Valley of the Seven Smokes. It looked like that was where they were headed now. The question was whether or not the destination was their own choice, or if they were being forced there as captives.
Let's halt up! You hear that? Somebody's shooting.
I do hear it. Is it some sort of battle, do you think?
Don't know. Could be some hunters, I suppose. Can't really tell from the sound of what's going on.
Well, if it was a fight, it wasn't much of one. Everybody's already ceased fire.
Let's go find out.
It was almost in the middle of the day before they reached the Valley of the Seven Smokes. Wingate had been here before and knew the area fairly well. He had already noticed that the Teton Sioux village of Hairface's people was no longer where it had been located before. And that was puzzling, not to mention might worrisome. Momentous things had been going on around here. Wingate? Wingate had no idea what they were. Entering the valley from the south, Wingate, Corrigan, and the soldiers proceeded north, taking their time now and moving cautiously because they didn't know what they were going to run into. But even as alert as they were startled when a group of about 10 men suddenly stepped out of a thick growth of trees and pointed rifles at them. Some of the soldiers instinctively lifted their own weapons and leveled.
Hold your fire! Damn it, hold your fire!
Wingate's eyes widened in surprise as he stared at the men who had him covered. They weren't strangers at all, and they weren't Injuns. They were trappers that Wingate was acquainted with from rendezvous in the past. He didn't much like any of them, but at least there was no reason for him to fight.
Snell! Luther Snell! It's me, Wingate.
Take it easy, boys. Looks like we're all on the same side.
These men are friends of yours?
Oh, sure.
Wingate was lying, of course. He just wanted to see what the hell was going on.
Then maybe they can help us locate the calling expedition.
You're looking for that artist fella and his friends?
That's right. Do you know where they are?
Indeed I do. A couple miles north, being held prisoner in a Sioux village. And if you've come to rescue them, Lieutenant, you better hurry. I think those savages are planning to kill him most any time now.
Luther Snell tried not to bust out in a shit-eating grin as he looked at the red and blue uniforms of the soldiers. This was just the stroke of luck he'd been waiting for. When he and the others had heard the riders coming, Snell's first thought was that a war party was about to stumble upon them. The men had grabbed their guns, ready to fight and sell their lives dearly if necessary. Instead of enemies, the newcomers turned out to be potential allies, and a plan immediately suggested itself to Snell. He'd been worried all morning because he hadn't seen any sign of Willard Carling while he was spying on the Teton Sioux village, nor did he see any sign of the other pilgrims or Preacher and Rip Giddens. It was possible that all of them had been killed in the battle with the Crows the day before. The thought that he had come so close to the means of making himself rich only to possibly lose it was almost enough to drive Snell mad. He had to find out what had happened to Carling. Of course, he couldn't just walk into the village and ask. He didn't trust the Injuns, not for a damn second. But with the soldiers on his side, he and his men could hit the village hard and fast on horseback, wipe out the remaining warriors before they knew what was happening, and force some answers out of the survivors. He and the others would still be outnumbered by the remaining warriors in the village when they attacked. But with the element of surprise on their side, Snell was confident they would be victorious.
My God! We have got to get in there and rescue them!
Those Injuns will put up a fight, so you better go in shooting.
Hold on a minute. How do you know they're about to kill the prisoners?
They've been chanting all morning, and I know a killing chant when I hear one, Wingate. I've come damn near hearing savages singing a death song for me too many times not to recognize it.
We have to rescue those captives if at all possible. I believe we should attack the village right away.
Now you're talking, Lieutenant, and we'll lend you boys a hand.
Snell turned to his men.
Get the horses. We're going to teach those murderous redskins a thing or two.
Once Snell and his crew had mounted up, the group began to move toward the village.
Part of the village burned down yesterday. Don't know what happened. Maybe one of the cook fires got out of control. We saw the smoke and thought about trying to sneak in while that was going on to get the prisoners loose. But we figured there were too few of us to put up a good fight if they caught us.
Well, you don't have to worry about that now. Those savages will never know what hit them.
As they came inside of the village, Lieutenant Corrigan drew his saber from his scabbard and lifted it into the air.
Charge!
The Injuns heard and saw him coming, of course, and there was no mistaking the intention of the riders. Arrows began to fly through the air as inhabitants of the village attempted to mount a defense. Snell grinned as he thought about how skillfully he had manipulated things into going his way. Guiding his horse with his knees, he lifted a pistol in each hand and blasted two of the warriors right into the spirit world.
Watch out for the prisoners! See that they come to no harm!
All around Snell, the other trappers were fighting with the same deadly efficiency. Each of them accounted for two or three of the Teton Sioux defenders. The soldiers weren't quite as effective. Some of their shots missed, but they did a good job of skewering the engines with the bayonets attached to the muzzles of their rifles. In a matter of 2 or 3 minutes, most of the warriors left in the village had been either killed or wounded badly enough so that they were out of the fight. All that was left now was a mopping up. Snell and his men handled that with brutal dispatch, cutting throats and blasting pistol balls through heads. One of the last offenders to fall was an ugly warrior with a scarred face and a little bit of ear missing. Snell recognized him as Bites Like a Badger, one of Old Hairface's sub-chiefs. Snell hadn't seen any sign of Hairface, and he wondered if Badger had become the chief of this band now. When all the warriors were either dead or too badly wounded to fight, the soldiers began going from lodge to lodge, rounding up the women and children and old people, and herding them to the center of the village. Snell stalked along with them, still looking for the prisoners. His worry grew as none of them were found. Then he spotted a white face as a tall, skinny man limped out from one of the teepees, using a crutch to get along because of a wounded leg. Snell recognized him as either Tom or Ed Ballinger, although he didn't know which Ballinger it was.
Ballinger! Where the hell are the others? Where's Carlin?
Gone. He left early this morning with Preacher and a few others. They went after the crows who captured Miss Carling and that fella Sinclair.
Well, what crows would that be?
Well, the ones who attacked the village yesterday.
What?
Wingate turned toward Snell.
You didn't say anything about any crows attacking the village.
I didn't know anything about it. We saw smoke and knew there was a fire, but that's all we knew. We thought you boys were prisoners of these here Sioux. We just been waiting for a chance to bust you out of here.
Well, started out as their prisoners. They killed poor Ed when they jumped us. But then Preacher fought their chief, Bites Like a Badger, to a standstill and, well, they called a truce and let us go.
I'm confused by all this.
So am I, Corrigan. Looks like we was mistaken of what's been going on. We thought sure that the folks from that expedition were captives. We didn't know anything about any crow raiders.
Who's left alive?
Well, Mr. Carling and that journalist fella Hodge and Preacher and Rip Giddens. Poor old Switchfoot and Hammerhead Jones are both dead. Crows got them yesterday. And, of course, Miss Carling and Sinclair. But the crows carried them off along with some Sioux prisoners.
So you weren't prisoners here anymore, but two members of your party were captured by these Crow Indians you mentioned?
That's right. I'd say that you killed all these folks for nothing, except for the fact that they killed my brother and planned on torturing the rest of us to death when they first grabbed us. I can't bring myself to feel sorry for them.
Well, they were hostiles, and we had only the best intentions in attacking the village.
The damned road to hell, you mean?
The important thing is that we still have to find the remaining members of the expedition. You say they've all left here except for you?
I reckon those crows are heading back to their usual hunting grounds, north and east of here, out on the plains. They're Medicine Bull's band, according to Badger.
I know where to find them. And Preacher will, too.
Then we'll follow along and try to catch up to them. That's the only acceptable course of action.
Now, you just lost a couple of men in the fighting. How many in the Crow War Party, Ballinger?
Lord, I don't know. I think Preacher said something about 50 or 60 warriors.
We'll be rather heavily outnumbered.
We'll go with you, Lieutenant. You can count on us.
I appreciate that, Mr. Snell, but I can't order you to...
Begging your pardon, Lieutenant, but you ain't ordering us to do nothing. We're volunteering.
Well, that's decidedly decent of you. Very well, I accept your offer. We'll continue our pursuit of the surviving members of the expedition as soon as possible.
Preacher found the canyon where the crows had left their horses before attacking the village. He had suspected the raiders were mounted, and this confirmed his suspicion.
This is going to make things even harder.
Why is that?
If they'd all been on foot, they would have had to move a mite slower. From the looks of the sign they've left behind, the prisoners are still walking, even though the members of the war party are riding. That'll keep them from moving too fast, but they'll still get along quicker than they would have otherwise.
Yeah. They'll make those prisoners trot to beat the band.
Or kill them if they can't keep up.
Come on, let's get moving.
Preacher had no trouble following the trail left by the Indians and their captives. As they pressed on throughout the day, their route wound through some heavily wooded hills. But overall, the landscape was beginning to flatten out. When they had stopped to rest the horses along about the middle of the afternoon, Rip caught a moment alone with Preacher, out of earshot of the other three men.
You reckon Carlin knows his sister's probably going to be abused by those Indians before we catch up to him?
Maybe she won't. Now that old Medicine Bull's got what he came after, maybe he'll be in such a hurry to get back home that he won't let him take the time for that.
It don't take all that much time, Preacher.
I know. God damn it, I'm just hoping for the best. Right now, that's about all we can do.
Faith Carling was dreaming that she was back in Boston, back in her own bed, back in her own room, in her brother's house on Beacon Hill. The snoring brought her out of her slumber, and as she woke, terror flooded in on her brain. Faith saw that it had been the hairs of Chester Sinclair's beard that had tickled her nose, and to her utter mortification, she realized that she was practically lying on top of him, cradled in his strong arms. Chester didn't let go of Faith, even when she put her hands on his broad chest and pushed herself halfway upright.
What are you doing?
Faith looked around wildly, saw the other prisoners and the crows who had captured him, and everything came back to her, almost overwhelming her with despair.
I'm sorry. I don't know how that happened. I wasn't aware that I was holding you like that. We must have rolled together in our sleep.
Oh, well, yes. Yes, that makes sense, I suppose. Since we're prisoners of these savages, and the only whites among the captives at that, it would only be natural that we would reach out to each other in our slumber. It doesn't mean anything except that we were alone and scared. Very, very scared, as any normal person would be in this situation.
The crows had kept the prisoners trotting along the previous evening until they were so exhausted they were about to drop. At least, Faith had certainly felt that way. When the war party had stopped for the night, she had slumped to the ground, stretched out, and immediately fallen asleep, not even thinking about the fact that she hadn't eaten all day and her stomach was empty.
Do you think they're going to give us anything to eat this morning?
I hope so, but I wouldn't count on it.
Chester's words proved to be prophetic. They were allowed to drink from the small stream beside which the war party had paused for the night, but no rations were forthcoming. Soon, they were on the move again, trotting along as the engine surrounded them.
I can't do this all day, especially with no food.
Don't talk. Save your strength. Don't worry, I won't let you fall behind.
Chester's words encouraged Faith, and she didn't even mind the boldness of his action in touching her in the night.
Thank you. You know, I'm very glad you were captured, too. If you hadn't been, I would be alone with no one who speaks the language, no one who understands what I'm going through. I'm sorry. I shouldn't be glad that you're a prisoner, too. That's a terrible thing to wish on anyone.
And yet she couldn't help it. When she glanced over at Chester, she felt a little better for some reason. She knew that he was only one man, that he couldn't really stop the Indians from doing whatever they wanted to do. But she was mighty glad he was here anyway. Uphill and downhill, through sheer walled canyons, across rocky stretches that hurt her feet, even through the boots she wore. All day long, Faith was forced to keep moving with the others. The lack of food made her lightheaded, so at times it seemed she was imagining this whole terrible ordeal. But then, sharp pains would stab through her feet from the blisters that had been rubbed there, and she knew it was real, all too real. They stopped for the night a bit earlier that evening than the previous one, but it was still well after sunset before the captives were allowed to slump to the ground. A warrior approached them and tossed something into the dirt. The prisoners scrambled to get their hands on the items. Chester grabbed two of them, one for Faith and one for himself.
What is it?
Jerky, I believe they call it. Food.
Oh, I was hoping it would be something to eat, but this doesn't look very appetizing.
Faith tried to take a bite.
Ow!
The jerky was as tough and unyielding as leather.
It's a small enough piece, you can put the whole thing in your mouth like this. Do that and let it soften up for a while before you try to chew it again.
This is disgusting.
It's better than starving to death.
I suppose you're right. Although it's so small, I doubt it will do much to relieve my hunger.
Exhaustion threatened to overtake Faith, but she forced herself to stay awake until she had let the jerky soften in her mouth to the point that she could chew it. Sinclair did likewise.
It's really not too bad.
No, not too.
While they were eating, one of the Crow warriors came toward them. From the way the guard stepped aside respectfully from the man and the Sioux prisoners cringed, Faith got the idea that he was somebody important, maybe the chief. As he came closer, she recognized him as the warrior who had tapped Chester with the coup stick and stopped the others from killing him. The engine stopped in front of Chester. The big engine lashed out, striking a hard blow on the side of Chester's head with his open hand.
Here now! There's no call for behavior like that! You have no right to bully us!
That was as far as Faith got before Chester grabbed her. As his arms tightened around her waist, he swung around, lifting her off the ground and turning her away from the engine.
Faith! Stop it! He's their chief! You can't talk to him like that! He'll kill you!
But he struck you! And put me down, blast it!
Chester lowered Faith to the ground.
Let me do the talking!
Chester turned back to the engine and moved his hands in that outlandish sign language she had seen him practicing with Panther. The Crow warrior signed back furiously. That went on for a minute or so before the engine motioned curtly for Chester to sit down. He did so, taking hold of Faith's arm and pulling her down beside him.
No! You're getting awfully cavalier about the way you lay hands on me, Mr. Sinclair.
I'm just trying to save your pretty little hide.
Well, what was all that about anyway?
Well, I think he said his name is Medicine Bull. He's the war chief of the Crows, and he's claimed me as his slave.
Did he say anything about me?
He said that since I was going to be his slave, my woman would be given to his wives to be their slave.
Your woman?
That's just the way they think.
And did you disabuse them of that incredible notion?
No, I did not. I thought you might be safer if that's what they believed.
These savages don't care a thing about that. But I suppose you were just trying to do what you thought was best.
That's right. I haven't given up on getting away from them, so I don't want anything to happen to you before we get a chance to escape.
What did he tell you there at the end, when he was gesturing so vehemently?
Medicine Bull told me that my woman has a temper as much like fire as her hair. He said that you were loud and rude, and that if you were one of his wives, he would beat you until you behaved yourself better. In fact, he advised me to take precisely that approach.
He said all that just by flailing around with his hands.
Sign language is very expressive.
Well, don't you get any ideas, Chester Sinclair. In the first place, I'm not your woman, and even if I was, I would never allow you to try to paddle me back into line as if I were an unruly child. In fact, if you ever lay a hand on me again...
If you were my woman, Faith, and if I laid a hand on you, it wouldn't be in anger or to teach you a lesson. It would be out of love.
Oh. Oh, well, in that case...
The feelings that suddenly sprung up within Faith were decidedly unsettling. Or maybe it was just that awful jerky. At least that's what she told herself. Yeah, that was all. It just had to be the jerky. Wingate tried to keep an eye on Luther Snell at all times. Wingate did not trust the trappers, not even for a second. He didn't have any choice but to play along with them, however. He had to think about Miss Carling and Sinclair. Their lives were in danger as long as they were in the hands of the Crows, and Snell and the others could help rescue them. Lieutenant Corrigan didn't seem to have any trouble trusting Snell, though. In fact, they had become downright friendly now that the lieutenant had other guides besides Wingate. Snell was deliberately worming his way into Corrigan's confidence, Wingate decided. But again, there was nothing he could do about it until after they had freed the prisoners from the war party. As they moved out onto the Great Plains a couple of days after joining up with Snell's bunch, Wingate brought his horse alongside the lieutenant's.
We'll have to be a mite more careful now. There's not much cover on this prairie, and it's so flat you can see a long way on it. If those crows spot us coming, they might kill all the prisoners before we can catch up.
Snell was riding on Corrigan's other side.
Maybe what we ought to do is get ahead of them and lay an ambush. We can move faster than those engines can, since we ain't saddled with a bunch of prisoners.
Taking advantage of the element of surprise is a sound military tactic. That's an interesting idea, Mr. Snell.
Except it won't work. If you try to circle around them like that, the crows are liable to spot the dust from the horses and figure out that something is up. You won't be taking them by surprise.
What do you think, Mr. Snell? Is what Mr. Wingate says correct?
Well, it's been sort of a dry spring. The horses might kick up enough dust that crows would notice. But they're kicking up dust now. Nothing we can do about that.
There'll be more dust if you gallop hard enough to get all the way around the war party. And they'll be more likely to see it if it's in front of them, too.
Well then, Mr. Wingate, what's your suggestion? What tactic should we adopt when we catch up with the savages?
We ought to catch up to Preacher and them others before we do with the crows. I'd let him figure it out. He's a little on the young side, but there's nobody better at fighting Injuns on the whole frontier.
Preacher? Hell, I've been out here just as long as Preacher, maybe longer. And I'm still alive and got all my hair. I can come up with a plan just as good as he can.
Well, continue to mull it over, if you would. To tell the truth, I need the counsel of both of you, and Preacher, too, if I can get it. I'm not ashamed to admit that I'm a novice at this engine fighting. Besides, it's absolutely vital that we rescue Chester Sinclair from the Indians. He's the reason my men and I were sent out here, after all.
Wingate frowned in puzzlement and surprise. He recalled what Corrigan had said the day they first met about a fortune riding on the lieutenant's mission. He had assumed that Corrigan was talking about Willard Carling. Carling was the one who was rich, wasn't he? Suddenly, as he glanced at Snell and saw the new gleam in the man's eyes, Wingate wished that Corrigan would just shut up.
I suppose it's time you fellas know the truth, since you're risking your lives to help me fulfill this assignment.
You just go right ahead and tell us anything you want to tell us, Lieutenant.
You see, my orders are to locate Chester Sinclair and return him safely to St. Louis, where he'll be met by legal representatives of his late uncle.
His late uncle?
Yes, Senator Ambrose Sinclair. Are you familiar with the name?
Politician from back east somewhere, right? And a mighty rich man to boot.
That's correct. And his entire estate is going to his nephew, Chester.
I figured he was just a servant hired by that artist fellow. Sure acted that way. He let Carlin boss him around all the time and never said nothing about having a rich uncle.
From what I understand, there was a split in the family. Some sort of argument between Senator Sinclair and his brother, Chester Sinclair's father, when they were both young men. The family was still very poor at that time. The two men never saw each other or had anything to do with each other again. Chester's father remained poor, but Ambrose Sinclair went on to become wealthy and eventually entered the political arena where he became even richer and more influential. It's possible that Chester Sinclair never even knew that Senator Sinclair was his uncle.
So he was working as Carlin's assistant without having any idea that someday he'd be even richer than the fellow he's working for?
I assume that was the case. Willard Carling is certainly well-to-do, but with his new inheritance, Chester Sinclair could buy and sell Carling several times over. And that, gentlemen, is why I've been sent to fetch him back. Senator Sinclair had a great many friends in the War Department, all the way up to the Secretary, and they want the Senator's wishes to be carried out.
Wingate scratched at his beard and tried not to let the concern he felt show on his face. This revelation by the lieutenant made things even worse than they had been before. Snell had figured on kidnapping Willard Carling, but now it appeared that grabbing Chester Sinclair could result in an even bigger windfall. Snell wasn't going to let such an opportunity pass without trying to seize it. It looked to Wingate like rescuing Sinclair and Miss Carling from the crows wasn't going to be the end of the danger, but just the beginning. preacher and his companions sat in a cold camp after night had fallen, having a meager supper of pemmican and jerky.
There's a good chance we're going to catch up to that bunch tomorrow, preacher. Got any idea what we're going to do then?
I've been thinking on it. There's no way we can slip in, free the captives, and sneak back out again without the Crows noticing us. There's just too blame many of them. It didn't work with the war party that grabbed you folks in the first place, and that was a lot smaller.
It shames me that I was part of that war party. When Hairface was chief, our people were always friends to the whites. But when he died, and Bites Like a Badger became chief, everything changed.
Well, that wasn't your fault, Panther. You and the other warriors had to go along with Badger.
We could have challenged his plans to make war on the whites. We could have spoken against him in the Council of Elders.
Maybe, but that's over and done with now. We're on the same side again, and maybe by the time we get back, Badger will have decided not to go to war after all.
And we'll pray to the Great Spirit that it will be so.
Anyway, back to what we're going to do when we catch up to that war party and try to get them prisoners loose. Preacher, it seems to me what we need is something to keep those Crows busy.
Too busy to come after us once we free the captives? Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. And the best idea I've come up with is to start a fire.
What good will that do?
A fire is just about the scariest thing that could happen out here on the plains, Hodge. Well, other than a buffalo stampede or a cyclone, but we can't count on one of those happening when we need it to. A prairie fire is something we'd have little control over.
Damn little, but maybe enough.
How would this work?
It depends on which way the wind's blowing. One of us will have to get downwind to the war party and start a fire. When it springs up, the Crows will see the smoke and know they have to get out of its way in a hurry. When they run, the rest of our bunch will gallop in, grab the prisoners, and head whichever way the Crows don't. They won't have time to turn around and come after us, because if they do, they'll be risking getting caught in the fire.
Of course, we'll be racing that fire ourselves. Plus, whoever starts the blaze is going to find himself in what they call a mighty precarious position. But I sure can't think of anything else that'd be more likely to work.
I've heard about these prairie fires. You're willing to burn up a vast area just to serve as a distraction?
Oh, it'll be more than just a distraction. If we can get the fire between the prisoners and the war party, it'll serve as a shield, too. By the time the flames burn themselves out, we'll be far enough away the Crows probably won't come after us. Now, Panther, I had in mind just grabbing Miss Carling and Sinclair, but in all the confusion that's going to happen, the Sioux prisoners ought to have a chance to slip away, too. Now, I know it ain't a perfect plan, but it may be the best we can do.
Looks like we're all of a like mind. Question now is, who's going to start the fire? That's the fellow who's going to be running the biggest risk.
I'll do it. It was my idea, so I ought to be the one to handle that part of it.
I don't think so. You need to be with the bunch that frees the prisoners. That's the most important part of the job. I'll start the fire.
Preacher might have argued that point, but at that moment, Panther Leaping tapped himself on the chest with a loosely balled fist.
I will start the fire.
All right, Panther. The job's yours.
Wait a minute. You'll let him volunteer, but not me?
He's got the fastest horse. That means he'll have the best chance of getting out of the way of the fire.
Well, yeah, I reckon that's true. Good luck, Panther. You're gonna need it.
We all will. But if luck is on our side, by this time tomorrow night, we'll be on our way back to the village with Miss Carling and Sinclair and hopefully some of the other prisoners.
The haze of dust that hung in the air a couple of miles ahead of them around noon the next day indicated the preacher that they had finally caught up with the Crow War Party.
Looky there. Now, it might be possible that's just a herd of buffalo on the move, but my gut's telling me otherwise. Let's get close enough we can see them.
Preacher wished he had horse under him. He trusted his old friend's speed and stamina more than he did that of the animal he was riding. But he hadn't seen horse and dog since he had been captured by the Sioux more than a week earlier. He was starting to worry a little about it. Right now, though, he had bigger worries, like surviving the afternoon. The group pushed on faster. A short time later, they came within sight of a dark mass on the flat, grassy horizon in front of them.
That's him.
The wind was out of the south, blowing steadily at a fairly high rate of speed. Panther Leaping pointed in that direction.
That is where I must go to start the fire.
I'd get a little bit ahead of them if I was you. Once you get it started good, head for the war party as fast as you can. We'll meet you there.
Panther raised a hand in farewell, gave him a solemn nod, and galloped off toward the south. veering a little east as well.
Do you think he'll be able to start the fire and then get away from it?
He'll damn sure give it his best, and that's all anybody can do.
The rescue party, now four men instead of five, continued closing in on their quarry. Their approach had to be timed carefully. They couldn't get too close before Panther started the prairie fire, where the crows might spot them and be warned that something was going on. But they had to be near enough to be able to dash in and free the prisoners once the Indians began the hurried flight from the flames. The preacher was counting on a little panic setting in among the crows. They knew as well as anybody how dangerous a fire on these plains could be. Flames moved fast and spread out into a juggernaut of destruction. Preacher hoped the crows would forget all about guarding their prisoners and flee wildly in an attempt to get out of the path of the fire. They would know soon enough what was going to happen. Panther had ridden off about a half hour ago now. The Teton warrior ought to be just about in position. A couple of minutes later, a thin column of dark gray smoke began to rise into the arching vault of the blue sky. The smoke spread quickly until it was a swiftly rolling black cloud. The war party was less than half a mile ahead.
Time for stealth is over, boys. Time for action.
Approximately a mile behind Preacher and his companions rode Wingate, a troop of soldiers commanded by Lieutenant Corrigan, and the group of trappers led by Luther Snell. Wingate and Snell had already seen the dust being raised by the Crow war party and pointed it out to Corrigan.
Look yonder, to the south, at that smoke.
What is it, a fire of some sort?
It's a prairie fire, and look how fast it's spread.
The smoke cloud had grown to an impressive size in less than a minute.
What do we do now?
The wind's out of the south. It'll sweep that fire right up over the war party and the prisoners if they don't get out of the way. We'd better get up there and see if we can help them. Fast!
Come on, men!
A group of men, nearly 30 strong, charged toward the Crow war party.
Fire!
Sinclair lifted his head, shaking off the dull weariness that gripped him after more than half of another day of being forced to move quickly on foot over the prairie. Faith trudged along beside him, and her head was down as well. She didn't lift hers, though, evidently not realizing that something was wrong.
Faith! Faith, be ready! This may be our chance!
Our chance? Our chance for what?
To get away!
What's happening?
The crows are upset about something.
Sinclair turned his head, scanning the plains around them.
And I think I see what it is. Look over there!
It's just some smoke. So something's on fire. What does that mean?
Look around us. See how dry the grass is? And the wind is blowing from that direction.
Oh my God. You mean that fire's going to come this way?
It's already doing it. And fast, too.
Some of the Crow warriors galloped their horses past, heading east, while others wheeled their mounts and raced back to the west. It looked to Sinclair like their captors were panicking.
We gotta get out of here!
Can we outrun the fire?
We can sure try. Come on!
Chester grabbed Faith's hand and pulled her into a run, turning so that they were headed back the way they had come from. He couldn't tell for sure, but he thought that they would be more likely to be able to get out of the path of the fire by going in that direction. All around them was sudden chaos. Some of the Teton Sioux women who had been taken prisoner panicked, and most of the children were afraid to tears. Captives raced here and there, ignored for the most part by the crows. A few of the warriors tried to keep them herded into a bunch, but it was a hopeless task. Unbridled fear raced through hearts and minds as swiftly as those onrushing flames leaped across the prairie.
Die, white man!
Chester saw one of the warriors riding straight toward him in Faith. Sinclair recognized the hate-distorted face of Medicine Bull, the Crow war chief. Clearly, Medicine Bull didn't want his prized slave to escape, and judging by the tomahawk he held at the ready in his upraised hand, he'd rather kill Sinclair than allow that to happen. The smoke from the fire had risen so high and spread so much that it blotted out a large portion of the southern sky now. If not for the rolling thunder of hoofbeats, the preacher thought that they might have been able to hear the crackling of the flames. He couldn't see the fire itself yet, but he knew that it was only a matter of minutes away. The preacher had expected the Crow War Party to remain together, at least to a certain extent, and flee in one direction, hopefully east. But that wasn't happening. Riders in buckskins and feathers galloped toward him and his companions. Fear had gotten the best of the Crows, and they had scattered every warrior for himself. That fear wasn't so overwhelming, though, that none of the warriors noticed the four white men. Several of them did, and they veered their horses toward Preacher, Rip, Carling, and Hodge.
Rein in! Stop and use your rifles and make your shots count!
Preacher leapt out of the saddle, planting his feet firmly on the ground as he lifted his rifle into his shoulder. Rip, Carling, and Hodge followed his example.
Three down! Let's move!
Preacher and his friends leaped back onto their mounts and raced eastward again without taking the time to reload their rifles. Preacher slung his rifle on his back and drew his pistols as he guided the horse with his knees. The 60 or so warriors and the 24 prisoners were spread out all over the prairie now. Preacher searched for Faith Carling's red hair, knowing he ought to be able to spot it. He hadn't seen it so far, though, and she and Sinclair were still unaccounted for as more of the Indians raced toward Preacher. Preacher glanced over his shoulder to see that Rip, Carling, and Hodge had spread out and were emptying their pistols into the Crows. An arrow cut through the air beside Preacher's ear. He jammed the pistols behind his belt again and unslung the bow from his back. Then Preacher raced on past, that particular killing already forgotten. There were more Crows to deal with, and the two prisoners he was looking for still hadn't been found. Not to mention the huge prairie fire that was still bearing down on him, the flames racing closer with every passing second. Sinclair gave Faith a hard shove that sent her spinning off her feet and leaped the other way, putting a little distance between the two of them. Medicine Bull galloped through that opening, slashing viciously at Sinclair's head with a tomahawk. Chester scrambled up as Medicine Bull reined his pony to a halt and wheeled the mount around for another charge. Sinclair wasn't going to just stand still and let the chief come to him, though. Instead, he raced across the grassy space and leapt into the air, tackling Medicine Bull before the chief knew what was happening. They rolled over and came up on hands and knees at the same time. Sinclair saw that the fall had knocked the tomahawk out of Medicine Bull's hand. That was the only lucky break he had got. The chief seemed to be unharmed, and he hated Sinclair as much as ever. Chief was too fast for Sinclair. He got his hands on his enemy's throat. The chief's iron hard fingers were clamped around his throat, and Sinclair couldn't get any air past him into his lungs. He stared up wide-eyed into Medicine Bull's face and saw the ugly killing grin that stretched across the chief's mouth. With a thick cloud of gray smoke boiling up to the right, Wingate, Corrigan, Snell, and the rest of the soldiers and trappers saw the Crow warriors galloping across the prairie in front of them.
Fire!
It was a skirmish that quickly turned into a full-fledged battle as more and more of the Crows arrived on the scene. Wingate rode among them, hacking right and left with his tomahawk. Even while he was fighting, he kept an eye out for any of the prisoners. He saw a Sioux woman stumbling along and holding tightly to the hand of a little boy.
Over here! I'll help you!
Wingate brought his horse to a stop and swung down from the saddle. The woman seemed frightened of him at first, cringing as he grabbed the little boy and lifted him onto the horse's back. Then he gestured for the woman to mount. She did, realizing at last that he was trying to help her. Suddenly, something struck Wingate in the back. Knowing that he was hurt, Wingate grabbed the reins, hauled the horse's head around, and snatched off its hat. He slapped it against the animal's rump and sent it leaping away from him in a gallop that carried the woman and the little boy back to the west, away from the fire. Then Wingate's strength deserted him, and he slumped to his knees. He reached behind him, trying to feel for an arrow. When he couldn't find a shaft, he figured that he'd been shot. Wingate pitched forward onto his face, trying to fight off the blackness that threatened to overwhelm him. Somebody thrust a foot under his shoulder and rolled him roughly onto his wounded back.
Sorry about shooting you, Wingate. But I seen in your eyes that you know too much about me and my plans. Can't have you talking to the lieutenant, ruining everything. So I reckon you have to die instead. Shame about you get hit by a stray bullet while we was fighting them crows. No more rendezvous for you. So long.
Snell stalked off, leaving Wingate lying there with his last blood running out on the ground. A red haze swam before Sinclair's eyes as he struck futilely at Medicine Bull. He was unable to loose the chief's grip on his neck. He started to send up a prayer for his own soul and for Faith's sake. Sinclair pushed himself up and looked over at the chief. The head of a tomahawk was lodged firmly in the back of Medicine Bull's skull.
Is he dead?
When Sinclair looked at Faith, he saw the blood splattered on her hand.
He's dead, all right. You did that?
Yeah. Yes.
You saved my life, Faith.
I couldn't let him kill you. Let's get out of here, Chester.
The smoke cloud had grown and the fire had raced even closer. Sinclair could smell the smoke, an acrid scent that stung the nose. It made his eyes water, too. And with every deep breath he drew, he could feel it irritate his lungs. The two pro warriors spotted the pair and came after him, bent on riding him down.
Run!
Even as Chester clung to Faith's hand and pulled her along with him, he knew it was hopeless. They couldn't outrun the engine cones. Sinclair looked over his shoulder again and saw that a third mounted figure had edged up between the first two. But this was no pro warrior. Despite the buckskin and the long black braids and the eagle feather worn in the headband. Panther lashed out with the tomahawk in his hand at the crow to his right and sent that man falling to the ground with a well-aimed blow. As he tried to twist around and strike at the other man, though, that warrior thrust a knife into Panther, driving the blade deeply between his ribs.
Panther!
At that moment, Panther leaped and lived up to his name. He threw himself off his pony and crashed into the second warrior. Both men fell heavily and rolled over and over when they hit the ground. Panther had dropped his tomahawk, but as he reared up, he grasped the handle of the knife buried in his side and pulled the weapon free. Blood welled from the wound. Panther lunged forward and drove the knife into the chest of the crow warrior. Then he collapsed across his body. Sinclair and Faith had stopped running when they saw Panther attack the two crows. Now Sinclair had the presence of mind to grab the reins of Panther's pony as it started past. All of his strength was needed to haul the animal to a halt.
Get on!
But I can't!
Yes, you can, damn it! I don't know where Panther came from, but he showed up just in time to save us, and I'm not gonna let his sacrifice go to waste. We're both getting out of here, now!
Sinclair took hold of Faith and practically lifted her onto the back of the engine pony. She had to ride astride with her skirt pulled up on her thighs. Sinclair pressed the reins into Faith's hands.
Wait for me!
Chester ran over to where Panther had fallen.
Panther!
Sinclair, get your woman. Go, Preacher. That way.
Preacher's here? Come on, I'll help you. We'll get you out of here, too.
No, nothing to go back to. Tell Preacher I felt the death of my people. Knew that I would never return. You, good friend. Never forget Panther.
Chester! Chester, we need to get out of here! The fire!
Chester turned his head and saw the flames dancing hellishly to the south, only a few hundred yards away now. There was no time to waste, and no way they could take Panther's body with them. Chester ran over to the pony, catching hold of the hand that Faith extended toward him. Chester swung up behind her and reached around her to take hold of the reins, banging his heels against the pony's flanks. The creature pulled his horse to a stop and looked around, his gaze sweeping the plains. He saw Rip Giddens, Willard Carling, and Jasper Hodge about 50 yards away, urging the terrified captives on. Riderless ponies milled around, spooked by the smell of smoke, which grew stronger with every passing second. The creature heeled his horse into motion and started rounding up the ponies. He drove a half a dozen of them toward Rip and the two Easterners.
Come on, horse! Yeah! Yeah! Get those people mounted up! Get them out of the way of the fire!
Preacher whirled his horse around and headed east again as Rip, Carling, and Hodge followed his orders. He still had to find Sinclair and Faith, and he wanted to see if Panther Leaping had made it too. The smoke had blown northward well ahead of the actual flame. The dense gray coils were beginning to make it difficult to see. The figure on foot loomed up out of the smoke and clutched at his stirrup. He recognized her as a Sioux woman, one of the captives from the village. He extended a hand down to her.
Come on up with me!
The engine woman grabbed his hand and eagerly scrambled up behind the saddle. The preacher kept a tight rein on the horse, which was dancing around skittishly because of the smoke and the approaching flames. He stood up in the stirrups and looked around, swiveling his head as he searched for Faith, Carling, and Chester Sinclair. He knew they had to be here somewhere. A flash of dark red hair caught his eye about 200 yards away. He saw two people riding double and thought one of them might be Faith. Before he could be sure, though, smoke drifted in front of them, hiding them from his sight.
Hang on, Faith!
Preacher's horse plunged into the smoke. The thick, choking stuff seemed to hold him back with phantom fingers. But after a few seconds that seemed like an eternity, he broke free of it and rode out into the open again. He saw the two people on horseback he had spotted a moment earlier, and now he was sure that they were Faith and Sinclair. He was about to open his mouth and shout to him again when another rider galloped up behind him. Preacher stiffened as he recognized the newcomer.
What the hell is Luther Snell doing out here?
Preacher didn't have time to ponder the question. Snell was bearing down on the horse carrying Faith and Sinclair, and he had a pistol in his hand. Preacher charged forward, hoping he could reach him in time to stop Snell from shooting. Faith and Sinclair saw him coming and recognized him.
Preacher!
They rode toward Preacher, seemingly unaware of the threat coming up behind them. The riders had almost all come together before Preacher realized that Snell was aiming at him, not at Faith and Sinclair. Preacher's horse jerked and went down, taking Preacher with him. Preacher's head slammed into something hard as he landed. Then, a black nothingness swallowed him whole.